Hello, and thank you for joining us for today's webinar, Sensor Technologies for Health, Wellness, and Productivity. I'm Nancy Stone with RealCom, and we're excited to be bringing you part two of our Health, Wellness, and Productivity series. Before we get started, I'd like to go over a few housekeeping items. First, please use the Q&A box on the bottom left of your screen to submit questions or comments. We'll try to get to all of them during the session, but if we run out of time, we'll follow up with you after the session ends. For the best webinar experience, we suggest you close out of all other internet applications you might be running. If you have any technical issues during the session, please contact me at nstone@realcom.com. And lastly, we'll be sending you a copy of the webinar recording in the next few days. The webinar today is supported by our gold sponsors, Bluetooth, Purell, Spacewell, and Innotion Alliance. You'll be hearing more about these great companies throughout the session. We also have two silver sponsors participating today, Angus Systems and Regato. Let's take a few moments to learn a bit more about them.
We've got some of the brightest minds that are pushing the envelope constantly on technology.
We spend over 40% of our revenue and reinvest it right back in R&D. Sure, we're in business for profit, but what motivates me and what motivates the team around me is doing the best we can for our customers.
One of the great things about the Angus system is that they're client-based. They're always listening to the clients and what they want.
Offices, stores, and restaurants require cost-effective solutions for workplace safety monitoring. Regato provides easy-to-deploy sensor networks designed specifically for these commercial spaces. Our wireless sensors are plug-and-play for quick installation, and our edge computing gateways are pre-configured to deliver data directly to your enterprise applications, making it easy to start tracking workplace safety, occupancy, cleaning activity, and more. If your team is looking for the fastest path to pilot, our integrated kits for Azure IoT offer out-of-the-box monitoring with a wide range of sensor options. Find out more at regato.com.
Thank you, Angus Systems and Regato, for your support. Today's webinar will be moderated by Anjanette Green. Anjanette has over 15 years of experience in architecture and design, advising on single and multi-attribute building and material certification projects across the globe. As director and co-author of RESET, Anjanette is spearheading the world's first and only certification program focused solely on indoor air quality. Anjanette, thank you for moderating today's session.
Thank you, Nancy. It's a real pleasure to be here, and I'm really glad it's such an expert team today. It's a real honor to be moderating this. So just briefly about RESET for those who might not be familiar with the standard. As said, RESET is a data quality standard and certification program that is specifically geared for use for the real estate environment. And in the next slide, it's worth mentioning that it's an international performance standard as well as a certification program. And again, it's tracking the health performance of buildings in real time using continuous monitoring data. So this is applicable for both indoor spaces and individual offices, but is also applicable to full building structures or entire real estate portfolios. And then lastly, for those who are interested in harmonization efforts, RESET is referenced in some of the world's most recognized green building programs. So it's really exciting, again, for me to see so much work that's being done in this field. And with our panelists today, they're furthering the efforts to create safe and healthy buildings for all occupants the world over. And so with that, sort of setting the stage for today's presentations. This is part two of the series. And so if you missed part one, please make sure that you check out the resources on the RealCom website, because you can see a recording of session one. But I think that it's worth mentioning, you know, 2020 has been an unprecedented year. So it's very helpful to have these types of webinars that talk specifically about health and wellness and productivity and how we're supposed to be operating health and safe buildings during and beyond COVID, not just in this recent pandemic, but what are building owners and tenants supposed to be doing now to evaluate both the behaviors of their tenants, looking at spatial and material and operational strategies to help protect the health and welfare, as well as the privacy of all the building occupants. So technology plays a huge role in this, not just in automation, but in innovation as well. It's really important that we utilize what we have in the market for these re-entry programs. And there's been a lot of solutions that are focused on just that, helping us make buildings COVID safe. And we want to talk about those today. So for everyone, I think we'd all agree that navigating the landscape of the COVID-19 recommendations and guidelines has really been overwhelming. But with this amazing panel today of industry experts, we're focused on smart building sensors and technologies that are going to help us understand how do we comply with these guidelines and create these spaces to support occupant well-being and health. And so with that, it brings us to our first video.
At Layered Connectivity, we simplify wireless connectivity with our market-leading wireless modules, IoT sensors, and gateways. We're also the antenna authority for the highest quality RF antennas engineered for superior performance. For unmatched wireless solutions, Layered Connectivity delivers, no matter what.
So with that, it's a real pleasure to be introducing Jonathan Kane. Jonathan Kay is the Senior Director in Product Management for Layered Connectivity, and he has nearly 20 years of experience in the embedded wireless and product design field. So take it away, Jonathan.
Thank you very much, Antoinette. We're going to look at contact tracing, social distancing applications as we've seen them for getting people back into the marketplace, into their places of work, into their industries. If we look at this in terms of the first slide, bear with me 1 second. Some of the challenges faced by the industry from COVID-19, there are absolutely many and varied that change by geographics and different environments and also the industries affected. But fundamentally, we boil down to these four that we're interested for the course of this discussion. The first is about manual contact tracing simply not being effective enough. It's not agile enough, it's not reliable enough, it's not fast enough to stop that spread of COVID-19. There's been much use of mobile applications, both on iOS and Android, as a way to look at how you could go about doing contact tracing. There are some privacy concerns, some incompatibility between different apps over different versions of the life cycle of consumers' mobile phones that lead to relatively low adoption rates, again, limiting the effectiveness against managing the pandemic. Fundamentally, a lot of employers don't issue company smartphones. Most people are using their own personal smartphones and mobile devices. And there has been pushback about security and privacy concerns about using mobile applications. In fact, the CDC themselves recommend digital contact tracing, DCT, to speed up exposure notification, as well as improve the accuracy and legitimacy and completeness of this information. And what we've got in the coming couple of slides is first a kind of an overview of what we found with some of the solutions that we took to market with our partners. About what was most effective, what worked for our customers, and then a couple of use case-based scenarios of applications being used for both contact tracing and social distancing out in the market. So in terms of the solution for reliable digital contact tracing, now the first is an interesting point, but we are slightly biased here from a company standpoint. Our background is in Bluetooth. We tried lots of different wireless options, but Bluetooth itself, and particularly using Bluetooth long range capabilities of Codify, significantly enhances some of the solution sets that we provided and was a needed requirement for the products we took to market. employers and customers wanted user alerts. Those user alerts for the devices themselves needed to be more than just lights and more than just the atypical flashing LED. They also needed sound and a more tactile vibration sensing element to the devices to ensure that the user was aware of what was going on. A real focus around accuracy. Bluetooth and RSSI is relatively a black art in itself. You need the accuracy required by multiple antennas within a device to try and get better pinpoint accuracy between the distances between people to have that social distancing. Customers told us that what they really required was on-device memory. If there was any issue around a contact that hadn't been logged or hadn't been able to be pushed to the cloud, that there was a way to be able to retrieve that locally from the device. You need multiple sensors in there. Again, you want to be able to look at different attributes. There was a never-ending array of how customers wanted to be able to mount these devices, how people wanted to use them. So multiple different ways of being able to securely locate the devices in useful locations on a person was something that had to be focused upon. COVID is not restricted to a certain geographic location. Solutions that help for reliable digital contact tracing need to have a global use case and certification and availability for any wireless solution that was brought to market. And then finally, in terms of the battery life, we looked at it several different ways, but the feedback that predominantly we got from the market is customers preferred replaceable long life batteries in the devices. Something other than charging that had to be done on a daily basis or whatever time frequency was much more preferable to go with a long life battery that could be replaced and not single serve devices that once the battery was gone, that was it. In terms of a couple of different applications, the graphic in the background represents one of the areas that we work very closely with our partner POM around, which is around schools and colleges and getting them reopened at the back end of the COVID implementations in North America and Europe. And this was all about social distancing, a way in which you could get people to a state where the device could flag if they were coming within or too close to somebody else. That relative kind of 6 feet, two arm length rule in order to have a form of physical distancing between two people. And again, you had to ensure that the students and the users of these devices had multiple ways of knowing that, both via sound, via vibration, and also via lights. Again, one of the requirements that we found in this market, they were particularly interested in replaceable batteries. They wanted to not have this charging requirement for students. They also didn't want this to have any other infrastructure requirements around it. So this set of applications could be utilized for social distancing and didn't need any kind of backhaul or cloud connectivity for the devices. And relatively the lowest cost implementation. Thousands and thousands, tens of thousands upon students going back to college. This needs to be as relatively cost effective as was possible, yet still keeping the accuracy and reliability of the data that they were providing and the alerts that they were generating to be as high quality as possible. And then the final bullet was really striking. This was a solution that needed to get to market now. It had to be available not just for proof of concepts, it had to be available for mass volume deployments in scale, which anyone that's worked within the electronics industry to get designed to manufacturing to high volume shipments very, very quickly is a challenge into itself. Second set of applications we found within the office environment where they were really looking at contact tracing applications. So the ability to be able to flag contact events between known individuals or known people in order to be able to have a reliable database of that information, to be able to have a true contact tracing as opposed to just social distancing set of applications they could utilize. Again, this was, you still needed all the same attributes from social distancing, but you also need to be able to log that there had been a contact. You need to know what the duration of that was, and you need to be able to get that data pushed up to the cloud so that those alerts could be generated and pushed back to the building owner, to the company, and then finally down into the employees themselves. And again, that same point here about availability, it had to be now. I'll quickly wrap this up with just a touch upon that last bit about contact tracing and the need for a cloud application. As you can see here, that all of this data flows from devices through to the gateways, through a database, and then into nice, easily be usable alerting systems so that you can provide that contact tracing down to the employee and to the end user themselves. So summarizing all of that together, it needed to be affordable, solutions needed to be scalable, they needed to not use people's own personal devices to be able to do this. They had to fit virtually any budget. They had to be scalable. They had to be available now. You needed to give employers, risk management ability, give them full control over that contract tracing system and database. They needed to be flexible enough to allow visitors into a building, into a location, as part of any usual security or check-in process. And finally, the requirement to not have GPS location or third-party tracking or location information. It needed to be relatively anonymized down at the device level. And that brings me to the end of the presentation, Anjana.
Great. Thanks, Jonathan. Much appreciated. And we will have a Q&A session, just to remind everybody, at the end. So we'll be following up with a couple of questions or anything that you have to ask any of our presenters. We'll hold those at the end of the presentation. I don't have any questions for you, Jonathan, at this time, but I will follow up with a couple during the Q&A session. So
no
thank
problem.
You for
thank
that.
You.
And so with that, it brings us to our next presentation.
These days, change is all around us, and it's having a measurable effect, especially when it comes to hygiene behavior. As restroom visitors spend more time washing their hands, hygiene products are being used at an unpredictable rate, and restroom management has never been more important. Onvation delivers real-time alerts on restroom conditions, ensuring you're always one step ahead of the ever-changing demand.
And it's a real pleasure to be introducing April Bertram, who is the Senior Business Development Director at Gojo Industries. April joined Gojo in 2002 to lead the Purell product development efforts in the healthcare vertical market. Since then, she has created new IoT business models in healthcare, commercial building, and other core vertical Gojo market. Thanks for joining us, April.
Thank you so much. While there are many smart restroom technologies that we're talking about today that really provide that health and wellness in a workplace, really one of the first lines of defense should be promoting good hand hygiene. This is really one of the most effective ways to reduce the germs that cause illness in your building. And I'm going to talk a little bit about that today. As we know, the pandemic has created a powerful catalyst for change, and we're really seeing an evolution of drivers. So where it may have been really tiered at the tenant and patron satisfaction, we're seeing that driver as health and wellness and safety. And cleaning and hygiene and expectations have changed as a result. And here's some of the things that we're actually learning that are critical for healthy hygiene as you return to office. So 94% of people are saying that they're washing and sanitizing more, which is no surprise. It's been one of the recommendations of the CDC and the WHO organization. But one of the other things we learned to make people feel comfortable and believe that it's a healthy space when they come back is actually observing cleaners in action and cleaning the spaces in which they're in. We've learned also that touchless systems are a minimum requirement for the restroom and throughout the entire building, whether it's at the elevators, within the lobbies, within the restrooms. And the conditions within the restrooms actually reflect how much an employer or an established cares about them, which is really important when you think about wellness. And we've learned that there's a preference for paper towels over air dryers as you think about technologies and touch-free technologies that you can implement. It's actually more effective at removing germs from that physical action of the paper. And now we actually expect to see sanitizer across an entire facility, not just in a restroom. That signals when they walk into a common area or immediately into a building, this is a healthy and clean space. Here's a look at some of the technologies that you can expect to see as a building strategy for return to work. I think we've heard about some of these already when we think about the air quality control systems, and we know that there are standards out there today emerging. Touchless access control systems, again, that touchless is going to be imperative. Health screening. We are seeing these health screening kiosks being set up in entryways, and we'll see some things that'll be shorter term and then some things that are going to remain for a longer term period of time. Tenant building control through apps. I think this is going to be a top three emerging area of technology. It's integrating access to these access control systems, seeing the health of the building, really giving that tenant visibility to what's going on to make them feel healthy, allow them to ask questions to really improve wellness of the tenant within that space. And then, of course, it would not go without saying that the restroom has become more important in a space for healthiness within a building. And the typical office worker actually visits the restroom 3 to 4 times a day. In your typical size building, that's 1 million impressions that you can actually make on a tenant. And knowing that you're doing the right things within that space can actually make them feel healthier and safe. So I just want to highlight how data can be utilized to actually impact the way cleaning takes place in a building, because cleaning is of prominence right now, especially as we return to work. Today, without data, cleaners spend a lot of time cleaning spaces, and specifically within the restroom, they're touching fleets of 1,000 devices, checking to make sure the product levels are appropriate. When you have the actual data, then they no longer have to do that. They can really focus on cleaning, and they get proactive alerts as to when products need changed out. What's also important, and this is really great right now with people trying to do more with the same level of staff, cleaning are typically based on routine schedules. So they clean the building no matter how much traffic was in it in each of those particular spaces. We know with these hybrid workplace that's emerging that really we're not going to know traffic patterns. And by having this information, they'll be able to tell within the restroom spaces which ones are used more frequently, which ones need service more frequently, and be more efficient about not routinely scheduling them all together, but dynamically servicing them across the building. But what this allows them to do is then the less time that they're spending in the restroom, they're actually able to be out in other spaces, disinfecting more thoroughly those spaces, their common areas, the lobbies and shared spaces within the building, which is really important. And we believe that this will be a higher level of satisfaction and a feeling of safety as folks return to office. We have a case study that we did on the Onvation Smart Restroom System that was at the One World Trade Center in New York. And the One World Trade Center, many of you are familiar with it, it's a 104-story building. Technology has been a big factor in how they deliver tenant satisfaction. And now they've implemented the Onvation Smart Restroom solution. And what they're doing is connecting in Purell, soap and sanitizer, Scott, towel and tissue, and restroom traffic data to manage their facility more effectively as they returned folks to their office. And some of the results they've seen, they actually were able to reduce the number of dedicated people servicing their restrooms by 50%. And when you think about New York labor costs, it could be $90,000 for a cleaner. And so they've been able to take that time that they saved and repurpose it for doing and servicing those other standards that have come into play for those higher disinfection areas within their entire facility. And so this has helped with tenant satisfaction. Using this data and the traffic information combined with dispensers, they're able to have a higher level of hygiene and cleanliness within their space, which has helped with tenant satisfaction. And the last piece that they've identified really was about sustainability. A lot of times cleaners will replace a product before it needs to be replaced, really to avoid a tenant complaint. Now that they have this proactive data information, they actually know exactly when to replace it, so they're not wasting and throwing out product. So typical organizations can see 20 to 70% reduction in waste, which helps with their sustainability efforts within their organization. So the One World Trade Center is seeing great, great results from having this, and we believe that there are a lot of other companies as well that can benefit from this.
Excellent. Thank you so much, April. I think, again, this speaks to how dynamic this panel is and how many different resources that we have. So I look forward to asking you a couple of questions in the Q&A at the end.
Great. Thank you.
So that brings us to our next presentation without further ado.
We are a technology company that combines software with sensors to turn corporate buildings in more convenient workplaces that promote well-being and productivity. We have deployed more than 30,000 sensors in more than 100 buildings around the world. Combined with our software, our clients can now monitor and manage their space. The sensors capture data on space and air quality, which is then shown on live floor plans and dashboards across multiple touchpoints. Employees can use the floor plan information in real time, while the building manager gets a detailed picture of the building throughout the day. The combination of real time and historical data provides the objective insight that is needed to identify wasted space and improve efficiency.
And it's a real pleasure to be welcoming Adrian Wygant, who is the Managing Director at Spacewell Americas, Spacewell. Adrian has nearly 20 years of professional experience in management roles at the intersection of technology, finance, and business, and has a problem-solving mindset and loves to tackle business challenges, drawing upon his diverse range of experience, analytical insight, and business acumen. So welcome, Adrian.
Thank you. That was a very charming introduction. So as you just heard, my name is Adrian Wygant from Spacewell. We're a software company that produces software used to manage buildings and workplaces, and we work with a number of different hardware providers to use sensors to collect data for our software. And our software is currently used to manage over 2.3 billion square feet, so we're always keeping our eyes open for any developing trends in the field. Now, going into 2020, it was all about cramming as many people as you could into as small of a space as possible while still maintaining some semblance of productivity. That was obviously all in an effort to cut cost. Obviously, COVID brought that all to a very sudden halt. And now we've had months of COVID, and we've kind of seen a general change in the landscape. And we're also starting to see an emerging vision of the future. So essentially, survey after survey is saying the same things. Workers expect to work remotely going into the future. Depending on what survey you look at, you get a different answer to that. Sorry. So Gensler, for example, estimates that more than half of the employees will prefer a hybrid working model, so between 1 and 4 days working at home. CBRE is looking at 2/3 of employees, and Cushman Wakefield is looking at almost 3/4 of the workforce looking for some level of working from home. That being said, research also shows that the benefits of working from home drop after about 2 to 3 days of working from home. So we may find that ultimately that will be this sweet spot of working from home. But regardless, it definitely seems as though working from home is here to stay in some capacity. And that obviously leads to a host of new challenges that, if not addressed, will make managing the new hybrid office very difficult, or, you know, feel like herding cats instead of managing employees. So the new hybrid office will demand some changes to the office, and that's where sensors and analytics platforms come in. So currently, Everybody is projecting visions of the future, predicting how things will be, but we don't really know what it's going to be like. The one thing that we do know is that companies are expecting to reduce space. So CBRE, for example, is estimating that due to COVID, 60% of companies are expecting to reduce space. Some other companies like PwC are actually finding that number to be even higher. In PwC's case, closer to 70%. At the same time, though, employee surveys show that workers expect more space per employee. So if companies expect to reduce space and employees expect more space, how do you know how much space you really need and what type of space specifically? Service providers expect that employees will be using the office space for collaboration, which makes a lot of sense because that's the one thing you don't really have if you're working from home. But at the same time, there are groups and jobs that require individual space. And that could be tied to parenting, so you can't really work from home in a very focused fashion. Or it could be that your home office just doesn't lend itself to that. But if you go too far down either direction, you could be hindering productivity of the team as a whole and the attractiveness of the workplace. And the last thing you want is your employees not to come back into the office and not feel happy. So the only way to really know is to measure how the space is ultimately being used. And you can do that using various types of sensors, using analytics software. But it's not just about how the space is being used, but also looking at the employee dimension. More and more businesses are moving to a flexible work environment. That was already the trend 2019 going into 2020, but it's been massively accelerated now, especially for companies that have no experience with flexible working. And making that transition is definitely not an easy thing. It's a great vision in general, but it makes a lot of sense when it works well, because then it really works. But when it doesn't, it's really, really bad for the office environment, because you end up in a situation where people who knew where other people sat in the office don't know who's in the office. Where are they? You might not end up with the correct equipment to connect and to perform. So you need a tool to not only measure what's going on in the office, how the space is being used, but also to facilitate the efficient running of the new hybrid model. And that can be using mobile apps that show you floor plans, show you the occupancy of the building, that allow for booking of spaces, finding colleagues, booking of services and tickets. So you need to have that software to facilitate the new work environment, and you need the hardware, obviously, to collect that data. So it really opens up the big question of, like, why even invest in a physical footprint at all with all this working from home and the projections that that's here to stay? Well, ultimately, investing in your physical footprint is investing in the future and more flexibility, because we don't know what the future really holds in stock for us. And so, sensors and analytics platforms allow you to use data to make informed decisions, to optimize your office workflows, enhance the employee experience, and make the office work better under the added complexity of hybrid work. So we're looking at the future and trying to prepare our clients to make sure that they are well prepared to go into the future with an optimized workplace and environment, to make sure that they maintain the human capital of their workforce, while at the same time making sure that they don't end up with a conflict in terms of how their space is being used. So thank you very much.
Excellent, Adrian, thank you so much. I think that obviously the topics that you've brought up are extremely germane to our scenarios. I think the data that you've got is going to be really interesting, especially for those who are in the process of writing questions about this. I think that we would like to hear a little bit more during the Q&A session. I already have a couple of questions followed up with some thoughts that I would like to bring up. So thank you for that really interesting presentation. Much appreciated. And so that brings us very timely to our next presentation video. I'm very happy to be introducing Graham Martin, who's the chairman and CEO of Enocean Alliance. It's hard not to smile after that video. Graham is a veteran in the electronics industry with 35 years experience in analog and wireless solutions at various engineering, sales, and marketing positions throughout the US, Great Britain, Germany, and Austria, and Norway. Any other countries to add to that list, Graham? I'll leave it to you. Thanks for joining.
Thank you very much, Anjanette. We've already heard today that sensors are the eyes, ears, and nose of the buildings. And it's very important to collect the data so that you're able to control your building and optimize your facilities. Now, in a commercial environment, that very quickly means you could have thousands of sensors, or in a larger commercial building, even tens of thousands of sensors. And the question we asked ourselves is, well, okay, how are we going to install and power tens of thousands of sensors? Especially in an existing building, it's not very easy to go in and just pull cables to tens of thousands of sensors. And also, if we use battery-operated sensors, it's not very good after a while because you have facility managers that spend all their time changing batteries. So the Enocean Alliance was formed to create what we call energy harvesting wireless sensors. And we created an international standard around this. Now, what do we mean by energy harvesting or self-powered? It means that the light switches, the sensors, they power themselves from their own environment. You don't need to pull a cable to them, and you never need to change a battery. The three key forms of energy used here are kinetic energy, so wherever you have a mechanical movement, such as pressing a light switch, moving a handle, opening a door or window, you have mechanical movement. This energy can be used to power your sensor and send your signal. Room light is everywhere in a commercial building. This can be used to power your sensors. Here, the energy is also stored so that the sensor also works in dark time, even over many days. And the third way is thermal energy. So if you have a temperature difference, you can harvest energy out of this and use this energy to power your sensors and to send your signals. So this is what we have done over the years. And just to give you an idea of what kind of sensors we have here, all the sensors you need to find out the status of your building, what the occupancy is, how many people are in the building, what's the temperature, the air quality, humidity, lux levels, noise levels, etc. So you can simply go into your building and just stick these sensors, they're peel and stick, stick them wherever you want them, on the desks, on the chairs, on the walls, on glass, on the ceiling, and all of a sudden they're sending data, the data you require to optimize your building. How are these data then collected? There are a number of ways. I show the two most common ways here. So if you have an existing building with a certain Wi-Fi network, it could be as simple as just sticking the sensors wherever you want, putting a USB receiver into your Wi-Fi box, and that's it. Within minutes, you're collecting all the data you need from your building. You're not opening walls, you're not making a noise, you're not making any mess, you're not pulling cables, and you're never changing batteries. It's that simple. The other way is to put this into your building automation system, so you can not just collect the data to make later decisions, but you can make immediate decisions about controlling and optimizing your building. This can be local control, this can be your building automation system, and of course it can all be connected to the cloud. Some application examples, we've already seen and heard some of them from Adrian and Jonathan and April. So occupancy is a very big one. How many people are in a certain area? Are desks being used? Are conference rooms being used? Do we need to clean them? Do we need to sanitize them? Same with the restrooms. Is the soap finished? Is the sanitation finished? Do I need to send the cleaning on demand? But also very important for health and wellness and productivity is the air quality, with CO2 being one of the most important here. And also other applications such as water leak monitoring, smart parking, HVAC lighting control. So as you see, it's very, very easy to go in, even if it's an existing building, and within a very, very short amount of time, you're collecting the data you require to make these important decisions about space, about cleaning, about air quality, productivity, etc. And some of the benefits we've seen, obviously installing this, if it's a new building, you're obviously going to save on the installation cost because of lack of cables and batteries. In a retrofit, that saving could be up to 80%. Health and wellness. There are many studies that have shown that if an employee is in his perfect environment, if the air quality is good, if the light levels are good, temperature, humidity, noise, space, etc., the employee is 15% more effective and 15% less ill. This can be quite a big number, especially if companies are office-based, where the employees are 80 to 90% of your total costs. The other applications, space optimization. We heard from Adrian that people will be staying more at home in the future. There will be a hybrid model. So you can either save space or you can give your people more and better space. And obviously, if you match the optimization and the occupancy together with energy usage, you can save in energy and CO2. There's no point in heating or cooling a conference room that's not being used, for example. And of course, this is all sustainable because it's all install and forget. It's maintenance free, it's energy harvesting. So that was a quick overview. The Enocean Alliance, we are a standardization body. We are 400 member companies around the globe. The technology has been around for 20 years. It's been installed in Europe for over 20 years and in North America for over 10 years. It's in over a million buildings. There are 5,000 different products. And just showing you one building here of the million, in this building, we have 20,000 energy harvesting sensors providing the data to optimize this building usage. Thank you very much for the time. I hope to hear from you in the future. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Graham. Informative and interesting, as are all the panelists' presentations today. And that actually brings us to our next presenter. I'm happy to introduce. That's John Chung. He is the Vice President, Portfolio Technology at Quadriel. And John Chung is the Vice President with Technology Digital Innovation at Quadriel Property Group, with 20 years of experience in real estate, currently focusing on technology within the built environment, which includes IoT, AI, ML, data management, cloud, and smart buildings. So welcome, John. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Anjanette, and hello, everyone. As mentioned, I work at Quadriel Property Group, and just wanted to start by thanking Sarah and Nancy at RealCom for putting on this great series. We're a Canadian real estate company headquartered in, I should move the slides, headquartered in Vancouver, Canada. Our portfolio spans the globe, including most of the common asset classes like commercial office, enclosed retail, multifamily residential, and industrial, as Anjanette said, part of the Digital Innovation and Building Technology Group. Our mandate covers all tech within the built environments, IoT sensors, network infrastructure, building systems, operations and support, and also all OT related data, big data, ML analytics, and of course, cybersecurity within the buildings. As far as sensors for health, well-being, and productivity, there's really five areas that we looked at or deployed or piloted in some form. Indoor environmental quality sensors, occupancy sensors that track, you know, in and out's presence detection, zone people counting, automated blind controls that are IoT based, real time location services, indoor, meaning indoor wayfinding and location tracking, and mobile access control credentials. And interestingly, the last two examples are sensors based on, you know, what people actually carry with them and bring to work, which is of course mobile phones. And I could talk about all of these sensors. They're probably their own series or topic. So I'll just focus on the IEQ stuff that we've deployed at QuadRail. When we look, lots of tech out there, lots of options, as you can see from the other panelists. The sensor we chose measures 15 different indices, including temperature, relative humidity, ambient light levels, decibel levels, and various air quality metrics like CO2, as listed there, carbon monoxide, TBOCs, particulates of various sizes, formaldehyde, nitrogen oxide, ozone, and ammonia. And of course, these platforms come with the accompanying software platforms, dashboards, and robust reporting analytics. As far as use cases for the tech, there's a ton. So, you know, we actually piggyback this on top of other pilots that we had going on, so around UV filtration and ionization systems, and we used it to measure the air quality kind of pre and baseline it, and then measure what it looked like post the implementation of the UV system. We've also deployed the sensors in various different spaces, our own corporate offices, other friendly tenant spaces, and then also we played around with unique areas around the building, like loading docks, washrooms, elevator cabs, even data centers. The other thing that we deployed, we actually had a building operator use this because they're like all the other technologies that were mentioned, it's wireless, so it's very easy to deploy. So we had a one building operator who was quite innovative with the use of this, and whenever he got a hot and cold complaint, he actually deployed the IEQ sensors in that particular occupant's area, and would get a much better read of what's happening, and then it was easier for him to troubleshoot based on rather than just relying on the building system data. The other thing that we're looking at doing is baselining RH levels across the building, especially with all the studies that indicate infections going up in lower humidity indoor environments. And then lastly, pre-COVID, we were looking at measuring indices like, you know, CO2, light, and acoustic levels and its impact on employee productivity. And I actually use the sensor at home. My kids are in their room. My wife has the den on the main floor, so I'm stuck in the basement. And I was shocked to see what the CO2 levels were. So I literally crack a window open in minus 10 Canadian winter weather just so that I keep those levels in check and I've got the fresh air while I'm working. As far as lessons learned, lots of enthusiasm, but piloting this technology is key. Around connectivity, and if you're looking at scaling some of this stuff out. Another big topic that came up was, how much and what data to share with tenants, because they were asking, and it's a lot of information that the sensors collect, and providing raw uncurated, uncontextualized data is a very bad idea, as the data can be misinterpreted. Validating and calibration of the sensors was also another important thing to consider, especially working with building operators and their requirements around the building. And then lastly, the granularity of the data, and I'm not sure this makes sense, but that was something new for property operations team. So the sensor collected more indices, and so there's definitely a learning curve around the other data points. And also they were used to working with data more at a building and a floor level versus a desk or space zone level. Sensors were also of a higher quality, so they were measuring in finer units in the building system sensor. So it was really critical to get the data at an apples to apples level, so that they can be compared. And then for us, next steps, broaden the use and do more pilots and do some more full-blown implementations, look further at developing some of the analytics and integrations into other systems, combine the IEQ data with other sensor data like occupancy sensors, and then also explore certifications with ourselves and with tenants like ResetWell and FitWell. And then lastly, to develop a comprehensive overall program around IEQ. And that's it.
Great. Thanks, John. And I don't mind the fact that you almost said reset instead of FitWell. I will take that as a compliment, because it would be really exciting to have sensors speaking to the reset program. So for anybody who's on the line who wants to hear more about that, I'd be happy to answer questions and field those inquiries. But thank you, John. Really compelling stuff. And I look forward to asking you a couple of questions during our section at the end. And so that brings us to our next presenter, Aaron Ulscher, who is the director of CRE Technology Initiatives at Carr Properties. And Aaron is the lead architect and developer of the Carr Experience, the mobile platform which delivers Carr Properties' rich amenity-centered workspace experience to tenants. So aside from the Carr Experience, Aaron oversees the technology development for building operations, digital signage, and marketing efforts. So welcome, Aaron.
Thanks, Anjanette, and thanks to all the previous panelists. It's been really interesting, and I've been, you know, feverishly taking notes on my end. So I appreciate everyone's time, and certainly to RealCom for putting this together. So this, you know, certainly this last year has been very interesting, and for someone that works in technology initiatives, it's been challenging. It's been exciting, but also it's been a land of opportunity. So before I get into speaking about how really the last 12 months have looked from my seat and from Carr Property seat, I'll just do a quick introduction on who we are. So we're located in Washington, D.C. We're a privately held REIT, and we currently own 14 commercial office buildings, and we do management, third-party management, as well as development. Currently in development, we have three projects, a few of which are just getting ready to deliver. Our largest project under development, most notably, is the One Congress up in Boston. It's a million square feet, and it's located right in the downtown heart of Boston, and it's going to feature cutting edge and very impressive architecture. So I'm on the IT team, and my role services innovation and initiatives across the business, most notably for building operations, marketing, and IT. So just a little bit of background on how we got here to these new initiatives. I think it's always helpful to kind of play back the story of how we got here and kind of the steps that we took. So March 2020, pandemic hit, everything came to a screeching halt. There was a lot of like knee-jerk reaction to figure out how we can really at a core level maintain safety for our buildings and properties. And our team initially wanted to develop perimeter controls of our property in terms of temperature sensing and temperature safety. So before we even got into developing a return to work plan or developing even a COVID response, we had implemented thermal scanning and thermal access control at all of our properties. And most of our lobbies, if you walk in today, you'd see a thermal scanner and then a nurse behind the thermal scanner that is evaluating and kind of running the program. So I wanted to differentiate that because I think the purpose of this panel is understanding COVID response, which is one piece, but also how does wellness and health look in CRE spaces in the future? So we tried to understand and react to the current situation, but also look at these initiatives to have longer life, longer lasting value to our customers beyond the pandemic, because we see that there is an end in sight. Although our world will look very different, we want the efforts and the investments that we make to add value. So where it came down to the initiatives that we've piloted and done, we tried to frame them with an understanding of looking at each one of these initiatives as a customer amenity. And we spent some time surveying customers in what they want, what they need, and what they expect from a property owner and manager. And one of the main things was they wanted to trust and wanted to have transparency in terms of how this wellness initiatives were handled. So after gathering feedback from our customers and developing a plan, we've implemented several initiatives that I'm going to discuss today. So at a very fundamental level, we knew that healthy spaces and workplaces that people would like to return to are going to have clean air. So it all starts with the BMS and the system that provides air and the environment out to our spaces. So we made some improvements to our building management systems, our HVAC systems, with the focus on three areas, all around air cleaning, but using UVC, which is a way of basically cleaning the air using UV light. Also, another method using needlepoint BPI, which is bipolar ionization, which basically attracts and captures air impurities. So you have a multi-step process of the UVC, the bipolar ionization, and some increased air filtration at the core level. So we knew that starting at the BMS was great, but with all these new sensor technologies out there, there were other products that we could pilot and deploy. So then we kind of entered into the world of sensors. And one of the things to speak about with our sensor pilot, which I felt was really helpful, was we tested in our headquarters at 1615 L Street in downtown DC, several different sensors that provided different reads, different purposes, so we could evaluate them against one another and also test multiple sensors at a time. So we tested everything from the Mach Energy WellStat sensor. We tested the IEQ sensors from a company called Senseware. And we also brought in a new, it's sort of a hybrid sensor. It's called Aura Air, where it combines air filtration as well as an IoT IoT air sensor, IoT quality sensor. So we deployed several dozen of these units around the building. And one of the benefits here is we were able to leverage our existing enterprise analytics platform. And one of the things, I guess, is a lesson learned from this is being able to pilot multiple devices is great, but at the end of the day, if you're taking data in from four or five different brands and types of devices, you have to have a kind of an apples to apples way to understand it all. And John mentioned this in his presentation as well. So what we did is we developed basically some common data standards from all of our sensors. And with our sustainability team, developed thresholds and targets for each one of the air quality metrics that were coming in. And we created like a standard base. So if we wanted to keep humidity at a certain level or CO2 at another level, those were standard across the device type and the brand. and then used our enterprise analytics platform to evaluate, track, and then develop alerts. So with analytics, coming into play, there is the challenge that was mentioned previously about there just being the granularity now of all this data. And most of these concepts are new. I mean, certainly they were new to me when I first explored this project, and I had to learn about air quality and learn about the metrics coming from all these devices. And I think unless you're in that specialized role of working in environmentals and maybe sustainability, you might not have a lot of experience with all these metrics and new concepts. So our role really was to make this into a consumable resource that our property level management folks can read, understand, and respond to, and as well as properly communicate out to our customers. Because back at the beginning, I mentioned that all of these initiatives, they boil down to increasing trust with our customer base to return to work, and increasing trust and transparency. So we are still fine-tuning on how that transparency element looks, simply because there are challenges in the new data learning curve, the different platforms, kind of these new elements. But our focus is on developing a kind of easily to consume indexed on understanding of how our environmentals are. And lastly, just looking ahead, where at least we see the data going is definitely in the future of boiling this into building automation. And we're seeing it in the form of digital twin. At least that's on our sight line right now, where we're looking to digest all the data coming from these different sensors and systems and start layering them and evaluating them against 3D models of our space. And we're hoping that through these visualizations that we're gonna be able to be more responsive and accurate when it comes to those hot cold calls, those areas in the building that tickets coming from our system that have affected environmentals are responded to quicker. So we're looking to take the data and visualize it and create kind of a living, breathing, movable experience through digital twin. We see this all playing together well. So just to close it out for us, all these initiatives, again, they really boil down to increasing trust and transparency through our customers, because I don't think anybody here really knows what the next 6, 12, or 18 months is going to look like. But the best that we can be like open, transparent, and kind of empathize with our customers, the better off we're going to be. So thank you.
Thanks so much, Aaron. Much appreciated. And thanks to all of the panelists that have presented today, both in video formats as well as this really interesting presentation. One by one, I think we have a lot of interesting topics and a lot of questions are coming in. If you haven't had time to send us a question, make sure that you send those within the chat. We'll be sure to address those if we can. And that brings us to our Q&A for the panelists. Aaron, you were a part of those, but I'd like to invite the other panelists on as well for a full discussion. And I'm going to kick things off. I have some specific questions, but I think this one has a nice general tone to it, and it's going to go backwards into some of the topics just for a second. And I'm going to sort of single out Aaron for a minute, but this question is for all of you. You were talking about how there's so many unknowns. We don't exactly know how much real estate is going to be needed. There's a lot of supposition about how much people are going to be using their work from home space versus their actual offices. And so with that sort of being a bit confusing and maybe a little bit daunting, what do you think would be a proactive approach for real estate owners, operators? What's something they can really sort of sink their teeth into now? What advice would you give them? And Adrian, like I said, I'm going to kick this one off to you, but please, I invite some input from the other panelists as well.
Well, I think that's really the million-dollar question, is what can you do without having the data in place? And I think the easiest answer is start collecting data now. And the reason why now is a good time is because most of our clients, at least, but in the industry, we're seeing a phased approach when it comes to returning to the office. So it's, you know, first 5%, 10%, and so on. So if you can use the time now where the office is not busy, where it's empty, to actually put sensors in place, set up systems to actually start tracking space usage, you can collect data in very controlled environments where you know, okay, here's 5% of the employees coming back in. They have the choice of where they want to work. You know, there's enough collaboration space and concentration space. You can start measuring how they're using that. And then you can start extrapolating. And then as you add in more and more, you can see general trends developing. And so, you know, now is a time where you can actually go through the building. And if you're using wired sensors, you can run those without causing all kinds of havoc. If you're putting in battery sensors, you don't have that huge change management issue of people sitting at their desk and all of a sudden a little sensor pops up, like, what is that? So you can use the time, you know, efficiently to actually prepare the office for that return and start collecting data so you can actually act upon the trends you start seeing. And again, we also kind of assume that those trends are going to change over time. So the sooner you start getting data, the easier it is to recognize changes in trends. So that would kind of be my general feedback is, you know, get started now, start collecting that data so you actually have something that you can act on.
Yeah, I think that's really well said. And would love to hear anybody else's recommendations, because I think that this is really top of mind for a lot of the audience today. I think a lot of people are sort of grappling with, well, what do I do? I happen to have a quasi-empty building at the moment. It would be great for me to have some ability to come in and do something that's proactive. Any other thoughts from our group?
I have one other note. Offer, one thing that helped us get started quickly is looking at the some of the current systems that we already had in place and allowed those to get started for us. I know one of the first things we did is we looked through our access control data through our enterprise analytics to see even during the sort of the dark days, which spaces were still having foot traffic and being occupied. And then we used the data to kind of drive where we were going to set up some of these sensors, which were, you know, what types of customers were still coming back into these particular spaces. So I think rather than like running in a particular direction without any knowledge and understanding, kind of looked at the kind of the data set that we had in place for our analytics to let that make the decision for us.
Yeah, I would love to just echo that and say that really maybe stepping back and taking just a little bit of time to, again, look at the data you have, a billion roadmap, and, you know, looking to maybe external consultants, but really trying to understand how you're going to phase in your technology. But right now is probably a really good time if you do find out, you know, here's the beginning of your roadmap, try to get those things implemented before you really have you've moved into phase two or three of bringing people back, because it's ideal when the space is less populated.
Yeah, I would have to agree. It's probably much easier to work around a space that's free of occupants and probably without question, much safer for everyone. A question came in, and I think this is related to what we're talking about. And I actually love this question because as we think about people not returning to the office, but rather working at home, this upends our whole idea of, well, what can we do to prepare our homes? So sensors for residential spaces or places where people might be setting up these sensors and devices without a professional IT or staff. Can anybody maybe touch upon that? If what you can do at the office, could you actually implement in your home?
This is Graham. Maybe I can say something about that.
Please.
I think it was John that said it in his presentation that when he was in his basement and his CO2 levels were just so high. I think that's one of the key things that could be measured at home. There are very simple sensors you can buy. In Germany, we call them CO2 traffic lights. And basically, you just plug it in and it lights up green. And if the air starts to get bad, it goes yellow. And if it's really bad, it goes red. And something simple like that can help you at home as well. Because if, you know, if the air is bad, your concentration levels go down, your productivity goes down, and your health goes down. So, you know, there are some very simple ways to help yourself at home make it more comfortable and make it more productive?
Yeah,
I think that's on point. Thank you. Sorry to interrupt. Please.
Oh, that's okay. I'd echo what Grant's saying. I think there's a lot of consumer-based products that are out there that are very applicable in the home environment. I wouldn't take. I was just playing around with the sensor that we're using in our office environments. But yeah, it was really neat to have, and like I literally won't let my kids study down here, as Graham's saying. It's not that, you know, it's like CO2 is like crazy, but you know, the indice that I'm measuring it against is what I've got and what I'm used to in the office environment, which kind of hovers around the 500 parts per million. And in my basement, it was like in the 800-900s.
If I may, there's an interesting thing that we've seen a lot of our clients really try and find out what they can do to really help their employees work from home, but also monitor how they're working from home. And those two things conflict a lot because you do have the privacy issue. I mean, no one really wants to have a sensor in their workroom, like, are you working or not? Because it's not always a workspace. And the other thing is, if you have comfort sensors or indoor air quality sensors, that's really good to have on a personal level, but do you really want to have external parties have access to that data? And that's another big question where, you know, when you are working from home, there's a lot of privacy issues and security issues that kind of pop up, because at the same time you might be having sensitive calls and you don't know who's in the room next door. So that's a really big new topic that most companies haven't really figured out to deal with at the moment. And then you still have like another layer where if you have people working from home, how are you tracking what assets they have? Are they taking home, you know, their laptops? Are you giving them funds to improve their home office with like new screens and so on? So you need a system to track that. And most companies also have a service or a ticketing system that's designed around their own real estate. So if all of a sudden you have a bunch of employees working from home and they say, oh, my laptop's broken, and they create a ticket, what location is that tied to? How do you know who is where with what and when? So you need to have kind of a software solution that ties all that together. And so that's one of the adjustments we've made to our product, is to really incorporate home as an office location, but also create those specific privacy barriers where there's certain information that you don't have access to. But I think it's generally a topic for an entirely separate webinar, because it's so big and there's so many different changes to it. But I think it's a very important bridge that we're going to have to cross at some point.
I'd add, Adrian, that privacy issue exists at the office as well, especially around that data, regardless.
But when you're walking into the office, you're effectively allowing them to track you. You're kind of signing off, have a badge to enter, you're using your login to access the computer. So different than at home, because you know your workday ends, you leave the office, but if your workday ends and your home office is your office, do you turn off all the sensors? I mean, that might be a solution, but it's not entirely the same. But yes, you do have privacy issues in the office too.
Yeah, a lot of the things that we've deployed, we've had to clear with legal as well.
I think the privacy topic is a big one that could well be unpacked in an entire presentation on its own, and not just privacy, as we said, in the office environment, but certainly as we move into people's homes, and something to really think about. Again, like a lot of these topics, we haven't had to think about these issues. So while we might not be able to get to all of the answers and certainly to all of the questions that are being posted, obviously reach out to the panelists and also tune into the future web series that will be a continuation of the conversation. One thing that I wanted to ask, there's a few of you could probably address this. John, obviously you can speak to this. I think Adrian and Aaron, you all three, when we're talking about sensors, no matter what the sensor or device or monitor that somebody is using, are there calibration issues that people should be aware of? Separate from accuracy, because that is another topic entirely, but what are some of the things that people should be aware of? Maybe John, you want to head this one up first?
Yeah, I mean, I would say that, you know, most of it was around, again, accuracy, and a lot of it was just misunderstanding the data, that the way the sensors were presenting the information was just something that was not what, you know, our building operators were used to, or kind of funny the other way around, where the sensors that were in place were, have been there for, you know, many, many years, and those were kind of off calibration. So it was almost kind of doing the reverse, where, you know, the data that we had in the sensors that we were deploying were much more accurate, and they went back and had to, you know, either do a refresh or look at recalibrating what was there. So I, you know, it was still mainly around kind of that data validation. We'd have third parties come in, and I think it's just people just wanna, and our teams just wanna be careful with, you know, ensuring that data, right, that goes into the system, as Aaron mentioned, for analytics and all that kind of stuff, is that it's reliable and trusted at the source, right? And then occupancy and some of the other sensors are a different animal as well, where you've got, you know, the sensors giving off data, but the design pattern on a lot of IoT sensors is that there's also some post-processing and signal processing at the cloud level as well.
If I may add to that, a lot of it is also a question of definitions. So if you're talking indoor air quality or temperature, you know, what's cold for one person might not be cold for another, especially if you have portfolios that stretch across multiple regions. So you need to really kind of define what you're going to be using as your parameters when you set up the entire environment. And that's not just for temperature and indoor air quality, but also when it comes to occupancy or utilization. What are you actually measuring as being occupied? Is it really the pure data where if someone goes to the bathroom, he's not occupying the seat for 5 minutes, and if he takes a phone call and wanders away? I mean, what you really want to know is, you know, the general overview of how much of your space is being used. So you need to set some time of timeouts, that if someone leaves their desk and comes back within 10 minutes, it counts as being occupied. So a lot of that stuff needs to be defined in the process of setting up the sensors. And a more kind of bizarre example is that a client of ours is actually measuring the height of their height adjustable desks, because they pay bonuses based on how much time people spend standing, because sitting is smoking, right? So you need to quantify that. But if you're 6'6", your desk might be, you know, very, very high, whereas when you're sitting, it might still be high for other people. So you need to do that kind of calibration. So a lot of it really comes down to the implementation phase, where you really define everything and what the client is actually looking to measure.
I think that's obviously part of the big puzzle that we need to piece together. It's obviously understanding the audience, what is the ask, how do we do this transparently, how do we communicate in ways that are understood, how do we maintain these devices. And before I switch gears, I'm going to sort of continue on this topic for just 1 second and think a little bit about what all of you have to say to folks who are thinking about the costs and the impact for putting sensors in a space or any of your respective programs. There's going to be obviously hard and soft costs that are involved. And I know this can be a fairly contentious topic, but is there sort of a ballpark figure people should be thinking about when they're looking at a sensor deployment program or this technological type of innovation? This is a very broad question, but for those of you in each of your respective fields, if maybe we could talk a little bit about just a startup kit cost.
So I don't know if I'm going to really be able to talk to the startup kit cost, but what I could say is I often think of the model as 330 and 300 that JLL kind of implemented from the energy, the building, and, you know, the employee wellness. I think that maybe people are going to think a little bit differently. Health and wellness has become a priority, and maybe the budget's going to come from a different space. So when you're looking at making these investments for data, regardless of what the cost is, the pool might look a little bit different investing in these healthy technologies because they're really thinking about it more now as a health and wellness for their tenants and their employees in that space. So I think that's one piece of it. I think the other components of what the cost might look like, it's really what problems are they trying to solve and prioritizing those, and then figuring out how to, you know, what technologies fit into that space and prioritizing their investments that way.
I think that's a great point, April, and I'd echo that same sentiment. That's the way we view a lot of these deployments. Is we look at, you know, what happens at the base building level, and then we look at, you know, what, you know, the tenants would look to do, and those are very different drivers and very different use cases and cost models. And you know, from our perspective, you know, as a landlord and asset owner, you know, we want to enable things like, you know, the connectivity and the infrastructure to support those easy type of deployments for our tenancies.
Yeah, this is Graham. I echo what April and John have just said. Historically, we used to talk about cost and return on investment on how much energy you saved. You would install sensors. It would help you to optimize your air conditioning and heating, lighting, and you would get your payback after 5, 6, 7 years or whatever. Today, and this is going to what April said, the cost of a desk in an office in a major city like London or New York is about $8,000 a year. The cost of your employees in an office building can be 80 to 90% of the total cost, with the building being 10 to 15% and your energy 2 or 3%. So actually, you know, optimizing your space and optimizing the productivity of your people will bring you the most these days. So I think when you're looking at costs and looking at return on investment, these are the very key factors that are now beginning to come into the foreground.
And that being said, though, I think that most people who are not from this industry do get sticker shock when you tell them how much it's going to cost to get sensors out there. And there's a large variety of sensors. So if you're trying to measure occupancy, for example, you can have like basic passive infrared sensors that just measure motion, or you can have optical headcount sensors that tell you exactly how many people are in a space. And one is more than 10 times expensive as the other. And for temperature or indoor air quality, it's the same. You can measure temperature and humidity, or you can measure temperature, humidity, radon, TVOC, CO2, and everything else. And the range of prices is massive. So, I mean, you should go into there knowing that it can cost up to $1 per square foot. And that's a pretty hefty price. But once you've wrapped your head around what the real return is and what you're getting out of it, it's a huge return on investment if you're optimizing your space, if you're optimizing productivity. But you know, if you think you're going to get away with $25,000 or something for a 100,000 square foot building, probably not going to happen, or it's not going to give you any meaningful information.
So I want to riff on this for just a second, because another great question came in that thankfully has put some more sort of additional follow-ups in my head, is one about maybe incentivization programs. Not just for, you know, the ROI and total bottom line, but other programs maybe on a regional or a local level, or on a full federal level. So government incentives that would maybe help offset some of these costs. Is anybody aware of some of these programs that might help cover some of these fees?
I think it depends on the segment of a market. So I know higher education, they are doing an incentive program right now that they just launched a few weeks ago to help get technologies there to bring people back onto their campuses and into their school safely. And I'm sure others are probably to follow. I think I'm starting to read and see that there are other things that are being discussed and potentially approved, even for the office.
Yeah, in Canada, there are a lot of energy-related incentive programs, and we've tried to leverage that as much as possible, like for, you know, pilots around EV chargers, even our occupancy sensor pilots, a couple that we did. We did have some funding there to support that program, especially if you can prove the savings based on, you know, occupancy and tying that back into the base building HVAC system.
We're looking at the expense of these programs in, you know, not just the operations bucket, but in the marketing and leasing. I know it's a bit of a stretch to get there, but we're looking to articulate this offering in as almost like a new amenity And from what we're seeing is that the market is responding well to the efforts, and well building and healthy spaces is desirable and is moving towards a standard for our top tier leases. So we're going to see value from the leasing side, and we're also, you know, these sensor distributions, they're the fundamentals of smart buildings. So if you're working on a building automation deployment, sensors are, you know, they're your fingers and toes in the building that can send the, you know, the messages back to the brain to save you on efficiencies and utilities.
And so we have just about 5 minutes to wrap up. And I would like to ask a question first to Jonathan. Jonathan, you've been very quiet, and I'm going to ask this of you first. But I'd like maybe all of the panelists to answer, think about this question and answer really briefly before we sign off. I think that 2020 has been an unprecedented year with a lot of harrowing events, to put it bluntly. But I would like to maybe think that there has some good, there's been some real good that has come of what maybe is a newfound awareness. And maybe, Jonathan, if you could just say one thing that comes to mind, something that has been an eye-opener, something that we should be taking away. And I'd like each of the panelists maybe to close on a final thought in the last couple of seconds that we have.
That's an interesting question. I can only answer this from a personal level. Maybe it's not the same as the intent of the question, but one of the things I found is, you know, with my work and my role, I traveled the globe every single month, every other week, no problem at all, and was away from home and my family for large periods of this. One of the kind of odd to see benefits out of COVID has been the fact that I have been home now for 12 months. I haven't done a single expense for any travel in 12 months, that I don't like even how to use the system. And the benefit to me is that actually it's brought my family and how we live and work in our built environment, in our home, significantly closer. Homeschooling the children, getting along, you know, that we are still in relative lockdown here in the UK. And what COVID has brought to us has been a significant closer relationship, or a re-knit of the family, if that makes sense. So strange to see a benefit out of a global pandemic, but on a very personal level, that's a benefit we've drawn from it.
I think that's well said. John, like, couple second thought on this, maybe respective to work and technology, if not personal.
I would say, and just maybe just more of a point is, you know, pre-COVID, we were looking at all of these technologies and the value of the data. You know, when COVID hit, it was a very straightforward pivot, right, to apply the same technologies to address use cases around COVID. And I suspect the same will happen kind of whatever the next normal looks like.
Yeah, agreed. Quick thoughts? Anyone else? Graham, perhaps? How about you?
Yeah, I can completely agree with what Jonathan and John just said. In addition to that, you know, we've been saving a lot of energy and a lot of costs and a lot of time by not traveling and not going to meetings and everything. And we've seen a lot of it can work without travel. And what I also like is
and we have technology to thank for that, right?
Yeah, and that's right. And I think the other thing is, I like the fact that health and wellness is now coming a little bit more, because that's long term going to help us a lot more, that we're looking after our people, that we're looking after our own health, and we're looking after the health of the people in our buildings.
Agreed. Adrian, how about you? Final thought? Oops, unmute yourself, Adrian.
Oh, okay, there we go. Two things that kind of jumped to mind right away. One is that flexibility gets rewarded. So the companies that really are agile and can adjust fast are the ones that make it out the best. And the other, I think, which is potentially a very positive trend, is that there's a much stronger focus on the employees themselves as the value generators for a company. I mean, it used to be, what is the productivity per square foot? And now you realize that employees can work remotely. They can choose from where they want to work. They're a lot more flexible. It opens up the job market. So if you were based in one location, you can work for a company somewhere else. So it's really shifted a lot of the focus and the power in negotiations back to the employees, whereas going into the kind of pandemic, it wasn't quite so strong. So I think that's a good development, but we'll see.
Yeah, no, I agree. Aaron, how about yourself?
I think it's this time will come to an end and our lives will be back with craziness, whether it's like commuting or just more work projects, people in the building, our lives are going to get crazier again for other things. So take advantage of the time now to explore new projects.
Yes, take advantage. Don't let this opportunity go to waste. And April, that leaves you to wrap us up and close us out.
Great. Yeah, I think that one of the things that stands out to me is the pace of innovation and change that we've seen occur. Things that may have taken 2-3 years to get to market are coming to market in less than 6 months. And so I think we're seeing creativity and acceleration across all industries. So I think that's pretty exciting.
I agree. So thank you all. I will pass it back to our directors to close us out. It's been a real pleasure, everyone. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Great session, very informative. Thank you, Anjanette, and thanks to all our panelists for your valuable contributions today. Thanks also to our audience for joining us. Before we sign off, we'd like to just mention a few things that are coming up. Tune in tomorrow at 10 o'clock Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern for the next episode of our weekly news show, RealCom Live. This week's topic is attainable, sustainable, tech-enabled multifamily housing with guests from Greenpoint and Real Foundations. And also be sure to join us for next Tuesday's webinar when we present part two of the COVID-19 Commercial Real Estate Impact Study, which will include reactions to the study by several real estate tech leaders. You can sign up for that webinar on the RealCom website or using the link posted in the chat window on the right. Thank you again and enjoy the rest of your day. Thank you, panel.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone. I really appreciate the opportunity. Have a great day.
Thank you.